Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 118 of Season 5 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Sean German of the Next Scene podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, well, you know, we had such a great weekend together. I said I'll bring you back. You know, because I know it's been uncomfortable for you sleeping on the couch. You know, after
I just keep wondering why does this keep happening to us?
Exactly. And so, but they told us there were terrorists at the airport.
Yes, they did. They certainly did.
Yeah. So minute 118 begins with a Bruce Willis credit and ends with the credit for Don Harvey. So basically, today's minute is going to be entirely credits that normally would be at the beginning of a movie, but this movie chose to have just one credit at the beginning of the movie, the title of the movie, and that was it. But before we get into the minute, I actually wanted to talk about a few things that happened over the last few days, in the last few episodes that I neglected to mention. So, you know, I've mentioned numerous times that I've listened a few times to the commentary of this movie by Rennie Harlan. And so what I did was for the last few days, I had missed it. So I re-listened to it, and I actually found that there are some things that I neglected to mention. So first of all, you have the idea that, you know, he was talking about the fact that when they were making these scenes, the final scene of the movie, so they use potato flakes for all of the for all of the snow, and what he mentions there is that it was freezing where they were filming. So he said that the breath that we saw, you know, 3 days ago from Bruce Willis was really that cold, and he said that any chance, and they had heaters all around the area, you know, for people to warm up. And he said because of the fact that the heaters were on, it kept melting all of the potato flakes. And he says that he will never forget the smell of, I guess, burnt or melted, you know, mashed potatoes. Because that
burnt mashed potato flakes.
Because that is what it smelled like on this scene, on this set, you know, filming that. Mm-hmm. He also mentions the fact that Bonnie Bedelia, you know, Holly had to take off her shoes for her to go down on the slide also. So her character is also without shoes, you know, not just the old woman.
Yeah.
And
we don't see her feet, but
that's right. And he said that she was freezing. And he said that's one of the reasons why they decided to put a blanket on her immediately as she reaches the ground, you know, in order to help her feel, you know, a little bit warmer of what's going on. And the final thing I wanted to mention is I was wrong when I said that all those planes were real. None of them are real. That is a matte painting.
None of them.
That's right. He said they used the effects technology of the time to film all of these pockets of people in separate locations, and they put them all together on the matte painting itself. The planes were all matte paintings. He says that today, in the digital age, things would have been done much differently. But back then, that's how they had to do these things.
Yeah.
And it's actually really cool to think about this because, you know, to me, it just I never think about the fact that you can, you know, have a matte painting and put moving people in different portions of it. You know, that type of thing. You know, I'm obviously not that technically averse to be able to do things like that. But apparently Rennie Harlan and his crew are, which is why we sit and watch this movie, because it comes across so realistically. Yeah. So
the professionals. Yeah, it had me doubting because my first thought was, yeah, it looks the vehicles, you know, the ambulances and fire trucks and the planes like have a very matte painting feel. But then I see the people walking around. I'm like, oh, maybe it's not a. You know, it's not, you know, it's not a painting. It's not matte because you see the people moving. Yeah, they had me dead fooled a little bit. Yeah. Turns out it was matte all along.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So we're now into this minute, which again is a complete credit minute. So we have, you know, Bruce Willis getting top billing here. And, you know, then after Bruce Willis's name, we get the title again, just Die Hard 2. And then we have Bonnie Bedelia, followed by William Atherton, followed by Reginald Bell Johnson. So the thing I like is that the first four people listed in this, you know, in the credits, and it doesn't, you know, this is before the credit. Well, in, you know, later this week, we'll get into the rolling credits of, you know, whether it's the same order or not or whatever. But what's interesting here is that these are the four returning characters.
Yes. Yeah. You know,
there are no other characters that are returning from the first movie, and it doesn't matter how much screen time each of them have, they're the top four. So
yeah, because Al has a pretty Al Powell, Reginald Val Johnson, is a pretty small part in this film, but as a returning character slash actor, gets up there with the billing.
That's right. And again, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he was more popular at this point than he was during the first movie, you know, when they were making the first movie, because he, you know, he was now in Family Matters.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. He's a big star.
Continue with the bad guys. So we get, you know, Franco Nero, the original Django, mm-hmm. followed by William Sadler, the original Death, or actually not the original, but, you know, John Amos. Then we get Dennis Franz, which, again, I think that if this had been made a few years later, Dennis Franz would have been much higher on the call sheet, I guess you can say. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the seventh person on this list. But I think after, you know, obviously this movie helped him re-jumpstart his career and, you know, getting the role on NYPD Blue. You know, he'd been in other stuff beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I think this movie was very pivotal in him getting that that role. You know,
right? I mean, he had a career, but
he was on Hill Street Blues. He was on, you know, a bunch of other TV shows. He was in the movie The Package. Have you ever seen the movie The Package with Gene Hackman? I love conspiracy theory movies, so that's a great one. Yeah. So he plays a cop in that one who's friends with Gene Hackman's character.
Mm-hmm. But certainly, NYPD Blue would kind of be the height of his fame.
Yeah,
they come a little bit a couple of years after this film.
Right, which is really funny because like he stopped acting after NYPD Blue. He was on 261 episodes up until from 1993 to 2005, and then that's it. He has no acting credits after that. So I think he just for him it was enough. You know, he was born in 1944, which means that as of today he's almost 80, so he's 79, but. You know, he stopped acting 15 years ago. So he stopped acting at the age in his early 60s.
Right.
Which
yeah, he'd earned some rest.
Which is even more baffling if you think about it. That, you know, how old was he when they made this movie? He was 46. He looks older than that.
Well, you know, being a DC cop probably ages you fast. So it's a rough 46.
Yeah, it's true. Bruce Willis is 11 years younger than him. So Bruce Willis was only in his 30s when they made this. He was 30, 35, 36, something like that. 35, I think. So, yeah, that makes sense. And then, so after Dennis Franz's credit, we get the credit for Art Evans, you know, who plays Barnes.
Evans, yeah.
Followed by Fred Dalton Thompson, who this was also the peak of his movie career, where he was starting to get noticed. You know, for him to then jumpstart. I mean, do you know his background? Do you know that he was a lawyer? Who was in a famous case, and he then played himself in a TV movie about that case, and that jumpstarted his.
I didn't know that.
Huh. It jumpstarted his movie career.
I know he's a politician. He's got a career outside of acting. I didn't know.
But that was
I didn't
after
know the lawyer.
That was after. Huh. He was in movies for a few years, and then he got rid. He stopped making movies, and he became a senator. He was a senator from Tennessee. I think he served two terms, so maybe that's what is it, 12 years as a senator, and he even ran for president. He obviously didn't make it very far in the primaries, but he still ran for it at the time, And, you know, we're familiar with him from, he's in The Hunt for October. You know, he always has mm-hmm. these relatively small parts, but he has a very large screen presence. So you
interesting. So Fred Thompson got his career started. His first acting credit is playing Fred Thompson. I guess he was typecast.
That's right. In a movie called Marie. I've been trying to find it for years. I would love to see it just to understand what it is that he did. But nope. Haven't been able to figure it out. Haven't been able to find a copy of it. When Al Gore became vice president, so he then won a special election to take over Al Gore's seat. And then he was reelected.
The senator from Tennessee.
That's right. And then he was reelected in 1996. So he only served 1.5 terms. Right. So he was a senator from 1994 to 2003. And then, he was a lobbyist even before that. He's got such a strange career arc.
He did a lot of different stuff. Yeah. Well, and there's a little bit of a break in his acting. You know, his acting credits around that time when he's in the Senate, but not a complete break. There's a, you know, he comes back in and he's doing a few, he's got a few credits from 2000, 2001, in a time where he still would have been a senator.
Right.
But, yeah.
Right. And,
He had a life. He had a career.
That's right. He declared that he was going to run for president for the 2008 election. And but he withdrew in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the race, which is that's where
I remember that he did not have a lot of support. Like he was not going to win that.
No, I would have voted for him, but that's the whole name recognition thing. You know, name and face recognition definitely fits in for that. And then after that, we got the credit for Tom Bauer, you know, who plays Marvin.
Marvin, yeah.
I'll be damned if I'm going to clean up this mess. Followed by the credit for Sheila McCarthy, who I will always, every time I see her in a movie, this is the movie I think of her from.
Mm-hmm. I think the same. Like she's been doing a lot of stuff. She got steady work as an actor since like the mid or early 80s. But I think this is like the one role that I identify.
Yeah, I mean she's been in other things also. I mean she was in the Day After Tomorrow. You know, the Dennis Quaid movie where New York gets frozen over and she plays like a librarian who's stuck in the library with them or something like that.
All right. Yeah.
And then the next credit we get is the final credit of this minute is the credit for Don Harvey, who I will always, my biggest problem with Don Harvey is I think of him from this movie and from another Bruce Willis movie. Do you know which Bruce Willis movie I'm talking about?
A Bruce Willis movie? No, I don't know which one you're talking
about. You don't? Come on, Sean. You're supposed to know your Bruce Willis stuff. Hudson Hawk. He was in Hudson Hawk. He played one of the... He played one of the candy bars. I don't remember which... I'm trying to remember which one he played. He's the one who got a plunger bomb stuck to him. I'm trying to remember. Maybe he's not Kit Kat. Kit Kat was David Caruso.
Snickers.
Oh, there you go.
Snickers. That's right.
Right. That's right.
Oh yeah. Snickers from.
So Hudson for me, Hawk, his character here is very intense in this movie, and in that one, mm-hmm. he's completely different. So it's like I always have trouble. It's great as an actor that he has so much range, but on the one hand, I don't know whether I'm supposed to take him seriously or not. That's the type of thing. That's what bothers me about it.
Yeah, I mean that's a sign of a good actor. That's kind of threw me off because the characters are so different.
That's right.
I didn't make the connection right away.
That's true.
He's very versatile.
That's pretty much the way this minute ends. You know, we talked earlier in the week that there are minutes that feel shorter than others, even though you know, that literally they're all the exact same time.
They're,
you know,
all just about 60 seconds. Yeah.
They're all exactly 60 seconds. There's no just about it.
Exactly. No, just about. That's right.
That's right. This is the first episode that we do not have anything about the script, because there is no script. It's done. It's gone. Ripped up.
There is no script.
It's ripped up like the the ticket that McLean got.
The parking ticket.
The parking ticket that McLean got, that he will not be able to retrieve his mother-in-law's car. That is where we stand here. Mm-hmm. So every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis movies. So Sean, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up? What have you got for us?
Yes, so I'll give you some Bruce Willis movies. I've heard it been said that when it comes to Bruce Willis, you want a number in the title. That's how you know you've got a good Bruce Willis film, and I certainly subscribe to that theory. So I'm going to start off with,
how does Die Hard fit
16
into that?
Blocks.
How does Die Hard?
Well, Die Hard 2.
Oh, okay.
But Die Hard's kind of an exception. Die Hard, of course, is a great film and a great performance from Bruce Willis, but there's no number in the title. But
that's correct.
Yeah. No, but for my personal top five, I've got so no Die Hards, which I figure we assume here, since we're talking about Die Hard films 1 minute at a time, we assume everyone here is a fan of Die Hard. So I'm going to go. I opposed the rule on myself to say my personal list is going to have no Die Hard in it.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with 16 Blocks from 2006, where Bruce Willis plays he's a cop who is trying to get Mos Def, who is a criminal slash informant slash witness. He's got to get Mos Def from the jail to the courthouse without the bad guys knocking him off before he gets a chance to testify. And it's the titular 16 blocks from the jail to the court that Bruce Willis has to get him across. So from 2006, that's 16 blocks.
Okay.
My next one is 12 Monkeys from 1995, sci-fi time travel type thing. 12 Monkeys, very strange film, which actually later became a series that I think only went a couple short seasons, but that's another good one. 12 Monkeys. My number three from the year 2000 is The Whole Nine Yards, which is a pretty good cast. Matthew Perry, Roseanne Arquette, Michael Clark Duncan, Amanda Peet, along with Bruce Willis, where it's a dentist gets mixed up with some gangsters, and there's mob bosses and all kinds of things. It's crime, but it's also like comedy. It's lighthearted, and Bruce Willis is a gangster in this, but a pretty good comedy, pretty good Bruce Willis film. So that's
hilarity,
The Whole Nine Yards.
Hilarity ensues.
Yes, it's one of those. Hilarity does indeed ensue. For my next one, I'm going to go from 1998, The Fifth Element, another sci-fi action thriller with Bruce Willis playing a futuristic or a taxi cab driver in the future who is
Corbin Dallas,
who gets us, you know, kind of a strange passenger who may be the key to saving all humanity. I'll just say it at that. If you've seen Fifth Element, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, then I don't want to spoil it, but it's definitely good. It's another one where Bruce Willis is just sort of a John McClane type, everyman type character that somehow gets mixed up in, hijinks. And hilarity again ensues. He's just sort of the everyman who gets mixed up in, bigger events. And has to kind of find his way through and perseveres in the end. So Fifth Element. And then my final Bruce Willis film from 1995 is Four Rooms, And Four Rooms is a, I don't know what to call it. It's, well, there's like four different stories from four different directors. Bruce Willis is in one of those segments.
He's in the segment written and directed by Tarantino.
Yeah, he's in the Tarantino. So the four directors are, so you've got Allison Anders, Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino, and Andre Rockwell. And they're four different stories that touch upon each other. They don't really relate, but it's four different stories based on four different rooms in this hotel. And really kind of the one character that brings them all together is it Tim Roth?
Tim Roth,
who plays the bellhop, who is going between these various rooms and tying the stories together. But yeah, so Bruce Willis is in a scene directed by Quentin Tarantino, and very, very entertaining film, a very fun film. I like it, and I think Bruce Willis does particularly well in that. And then I've got a bonus. I know those were my five. I'm just going to throw in a little bonus. In IMDb, Bruce Willis, his first credit, his oldest listing in 1980, and uncredited part in The First Deadly Sin.
Ooh.
So even at the very beginning, got started off with movies with numbers in the title, which I've never seen, I've never heard of before. All I know is it's Bruce Willis's first credit, an uncredited role in The First Deadly Sin. So that's my Bruce Willis 5+1.
Very cool. All right, great. And because you will not be here this week on Thursday, so the segment that we would normally do on Thursday, I will we'll do now also. It's on Thursdays we have the segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are somehow related to aviation, whether it's something that happens in an airport or on an airplane or somewhere in the sky, whatever it is. So, Sean, why don't you give us your top five there, too? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Sure. So I can give you five films that involve airplanes and air flight and airports and all that fun stuff. So I'm going to start with Wings from 1927, which is it's a World War I film. It's the tale of two men from the same town. One is sort of... comes from the good side of town, richer, hoity-toity. The other one, more blue-collar, but they both end up flying in World War I, and they both fall for the same woman, played by Clara Bow. But I don't know if it's – well, I think it's the first Academy Award winner
for
the
picture.
Yes, it is. But also an early film with We're Flying. And, air combat plays a significant part, and it really is it's a good movie. It's an interesting story, but also a technological marvel with what they were able to do at that time with the lack of any of the modern special effects that we have these days. All the flying is real flying. There were several accidents. I think a couple people died during filming because it's all done. All the flight scenes are actual planes flying around. They didn't have the matte paintings that we were talking about.
That's right.
The scene of at the airport and all the planes that we were talking about last minute. So, all that was done real with actual planes flying around. So, so Wings from 1927. My next film from 1970, Airport. A big sort of the original big airline disaster film.
Jim will be very happy to hear that.
Yeah. Our buddy Jim O'Kane, who covered that film 1 minute at a time. So, yeah, Airport from 1970. We'll jump ahead to 1997, Con Air with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and then
he is a – yeah.
No, I was going to say another shout-out to another Movies by Minute podcast with Jay Clute and Mark Hoffmeyer, who did Con Air Pod. They did it scenes – They had like 40 scenes. They didn't do it minute by minute, but it still counts. And they finished this past summer.
Yeah, doing absolutely.
Great job, guys.
Yeah.
Shout out to you.
Yeah, another great film. That's another great podcast. And yeah, that's a, you know, an exciting, yeah, certainly lots of flying and planes involved in that. So that's a lot of fun. My next one is going to be Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. So, you know, one third of that title is Planes from 1987. And one of the films we've covered at Next Scene Podcast with our holiday specials, a great, you know, a great film that features airplanes and air travel, and also a great Thanksgiving film. And we covered that one year as a Thanksgiving holiday special, the USA Thanksgiving, not Canadian Thanksgiving.
Right.
But I suppose you could watch it for Canadian Thanksgiving as well, and listen to the podcast.
That's true. Or you can go and listen to my entire season talking about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know.
yeah, you could do that too. Yeah, so I mean, a film so great it got covered twice by two different podcasts.
There you go.
And probably others, I'm sure. And then my last one, and actually, I didn't do this on purpose. I wasn't thinking about it when I made the list, but another film that I believe has been covered 1 minute at a time, and that is from 1980, Airplane. So of course, you can't talk about films featuring airplanes without talking about airplanes. So that's going to be my last one.
All right. That makes sense. That's great. All right. So, Sean, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Once again, I'm Sean. I'm from Next Scene Podcast, where we're taking on pop culture one scene at a time. We're at nextscenepod.com, at Next Scene Pod on the social media. And our big holiday special coming up for the end of this year, we will be covering Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
All right. Very cool.
So tune in. Check it out.
Yeah, I will be there. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, Sean, thank you very much for joining me for this long weekend. I guess you can look at it that way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been a blast. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I had a great time too. Hopefully our listeners also enjoyed everything that we had to say about it. Even though we probably told the I love you joke a little too much, but why not? But they said that there were terrorists at the airport. So who knows?
Yeah, I heard that too.
But that's okay. All right, so I will be back tomorrow with another guest, and keep coming back every day this week. This entire week we will have an episode every day. Sunday will be the final episode of this season, and Monday season 6 begins. So make sure you're back to hear all about a brand new movie. So until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there.